And it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. And I suggest that you have a pencil and paper handy, because I'm going to be giving out information that you might just want to write down so that you can remember it lately. Because if your brain works like mine does, if I don't write it down, I'm not going to remember what's happening. And some of this is pretty important. And let's start off with announcements. The Rod Coronado speaking tour has begun, in this story from the Earth First Newswire. Hunt Saboteurs Northwest, resistance ecology, and longtime activist and former political prisoner Rod Coronado kicked off their Northwest speaking tour tonight to raise awareness about wolf hunts and hunt sabotage. The upcoming dates and locations are tomorrow, Friday, January 31st. Rod is going to, and the tour is going to be in Seattle, Washington at the Black Coffee Co-op at 7 p.m. On Saturday, February 1st, they'll be in Portland, Oregon at the Portland State University Student Union Room 238 at 7 p.m. On Sunday, February 2nd, in Eugene, Oregon, they'll be at the University of Oregon Room McKinsey 221 at 7 p.m. And then the next date I have is Saturday, March 1st in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania at Wooden Shoe Books and Records at 7 p.m. The wolf is not a recreational predator, but they are a predator that will indeed have an impact on their prey populations, not only to the degree that many people propose. We need to share not only the deer with their natural predators, but our wilderness home as well. The American wilderness is a spectacular place, and its natural beauty is its greatest asset. Wolves are an even greater asset to the environment as predators who survive on not only the deer they kill, but those wounded and abandoned by firearms hunters. We have the potential as Americans to create a healthy environment for both wolves and humans by living in harmony with wolves and respecting the religious beliefs of others who are so disrespected with this hunt. Better that than continuing to live in the past and rejecting a willingness to share our home with others who have survived genocidal persecution, both animal and human. Without a foundation of reciprocity and respect, we threaten not only nature's delicate balance, but also our place and relations in it. Rod Coronado is well known among animal activists for his direct action activism, including sabotaging mountain lion traps and arson. Now living in Michigan, Coronado has taken on the task of spreading awareness about wolves. A lot of people know me because of my past activism, so I'm trying to use that, take advantage of that, to get people involved in the wolf issue, Coronado says. Michigan became the sixth state to legalize wolf hunts, saying that overpopulation and danger to citizens were the primary reasons. Coronado will be speaking out against the hunts on his tour. While Oregon has not legalized wolf hunts, there has been controversy over the use of lethal control of wolves that prey on livestock. It's the first time in like 9 years I've been able to be involved in activism, Coronado says. Prior to this tour, Coronado had been in prison and later serving probation for various illegal activities, such as burning a seed cooperative at a branch of the Oregon State University and setting animals free at Washington State University. It wouldn't take me much to end up in federal prison for the rest of my life, Coronado says. I'd rather see all the intelligent, effective activists dedicating themselves to more sustainable tactics. One of those tactics for Coronado is spreading awareness and empowering people to make a difference. I want them to feel like they have a voice and that there still are avenues for them to make a difference for animals in the wild, Coronado said. It's really easy to click a button and send a letter to an agency, but we need to get out there in the field and see what's being done to wildlife. Coronado says his talk won't strictly be about business. He plans on encouraging and organizing people to go camping in areas that are populated with wolves. We have to remember to have a sense of humor and have fun, Coronado said. Hunt Saboteurs Northwest needs your support to help document and prevent North American wolf hunts. Donations are needed for food, hotels when needed, petrol, and basic supplies. You can make a PayPal donation to www.becausewemust.org. That's becausewemust.org. And you could also purchase a Hunt Seb shirt or a patch. Once again, those talks by Rod Coronado are Friday, January 31st at Seattle, Washington at the Black Coffee Co-op, 7 p.m. Saturday, February 1st in Portland, Oregon at PSU Student Union Room 238 at 7 p.m. Sunday, February 2nd in Eugene, Oregon at the UO Room McKinsey 221 at 7 p.m. and Saturday, March 1st in Philadelphia, PA at Wooden Shoe Books and Records, 7 p.m. Major charges have been dropped for a Willits bypass protester in this story from Save Little Lake Valley and the Earth First Newswire. In a major victory for activists everywhere who stand up against the destruction of natural communities, journalist Will Perry settles his case with the Mendocino County District Attorney's Office on favorable terms. Perry pled no contest to two counts of unlawful entry, both misdemeanors, that will drop to infractions after a deferred judgment period of 24 months. Parrish had previously faced 16 misdemeanors, including 14 counts of unlawful entry and two counts of resisting arrest, as well as three possible misdemeanor counts of contempt of court for allegedly violating the court sanctioned order to stay away from the Willits Bypass construction area. These charges carried a maximum jail sentence of 8 years. Among other stipulations, Parrish will perform 100 hours of community service, the easiest thing in the world for me to do, Parrish noted, and has agreed not to interfere physically with the Willits Bypass construction during the deferred judgment period. In a first for Willits Bypass protesters who have faced misdemeanor charges, Parrish has no stay-away order. He can congregate anywhere the public is allowed without fear of being arrested, which he was this past September 18th while attempting to report for the Anderson Valley Advertiser and KMUD News on a California Highway Patrol SWAT team extraction of tree sitters. In that case, four CHP officers sprinted across Highway 101 to arrest him as he stood on private property, while a CHP chopper pursued and surveilled him from overhead. This last stipulation is a big victory with respect to Parrish's First Amendment right to continue covering the bypass for the Anderson Valley Advertiser and other news outlets. The plea also includes a provision that the DA's office won't file a charge that Parrish was in contempt of court for allegedly violating a stay-away order in connection with his September arrest. Finally, there is the matter of restitution. Parrish's attorneys and the prosecution have been negotiating regarding a restitution amount, with the likely outcome that it will be a small fraction of what Caltrans has asked for. Unless the prosecution and defense agree on an amount beforehand, the court will hold a restitution hearing in April. Caltrans has pursued nearly $500,000 in restitution against Parrish. The Anderson Valley Advertiser published an excellent editorial this week exposing the utter absurdity of Caltrans's claim and the greed that underlies it. Despite only a few days of promotional notice concerning the pretrial, more than 75 people turned out in support of Parrish. As the court proceedings were wrapping up, Judge John Benke turned toward the assembled throng and said rather wryly, "This is the biggest crowd this courtroom has ever had at any uncontested hearing." He added, "I do recognize that the broader issue of the Willits Bypass has been very contested for some time." Unquote. Following the court proceedings, Parrish and his supporters gathered for a press conference and rally on the courthouse steps. Rosamond Crowder gave an overview of damage the Caltrans bypass reeks on Little Lake Valley's watershed and water supply. And I might add that Willits, California, is one of the towns in California that is due to run out of water in 90 days unless they get more precipitation. Continuing on with the story, Omar Figueroa, Parrish's attorney, gave a stirring speech about the importance of standing up to ecosystem destruction, stressing that, quote, "lawyers like me will stand up with you and keep you out of jail," unquote. Parrish then gave a speech that was interrupted multiple times by sustained applause. "This settlement is not everything I would have hoped for, but it's the one I can live with," Parrish said. "What I can't live with is global climate change. What I can't live with is destruction of wetlands. What I can't live with is a power structure that is accustomed to steamrolling over everything and anyone who stands in its way, such as we have personally experienced in Little Lake Valley," he continued. "With my energy freed up by this settlement, I propose to continue to stand side by side and link arms with anyone else who is standing up to oppose these things." And in other California highway news, EPIC is declaring victory in Richardson Grove in this story by the Environmental Protection Information Center. The California Court of Appeals today ordered Caltrans to reevaluate the environmental impacts of a controversial highway widening project in Humboldt County that would harm irreplaceable old-growth redwood trees in Richardson Grove State Park. The appeals court unanimously found that Caltrans failed to follow the law in assessing impacts to ancient redwoods and providing mitigation measures to reduce potentially severe harm to the trees. Caltrans's project, intended to allow bigger trucks to travel Highway 101 through the park, would require excavation, fill, and paving within the fragile root zones of Richardson Grove's ancient trees. Quote, "This is a victory for Richardson Grove's ancient trees and for the generations of travelers, hikers, and campers who have enjoyed their magnificence," said Center for Biological Diversity attorney Kevin Bundy. Continuing with the quote, "Caltrans owes the public a full and honest account of how its highway widening plans could damage this irreplaceable state park," unquote. "The significance of this ruling cannot be overstated," said Gary Graham Hughes, executive director of the Environmental Protection Information Center. "Our ancient redwoods are invaluable, and we hope Caltrans gets the message that their survival cannot be put at risk by a careless highway development proposal," unquote. Richardson Grove State Park is home to one of the last protected stands of accessible old-growth redwoods in the world, where drivers first encounter significant ancient redwoods when heading north on Highway 101. The park also contains essential habitat for threatened and endangered species such as the marbled murrelet and northern spotted owl, and its creeks support runs of imperiled salmon and steelhead trout. Caltrans first proposed the Richardson Grove Highway Widening Project in 2007. Opposition to the project has continued to grow, led by the Save Richardson Grove Coalition, a diverse group of community members including economists, business owners, scientists, and a consortium of 10 federally recognized Northern California tribes with longstanding ties to the Grove. The proposed Richardson Grove Highway widening is one of several Caltrans projects that threaten sensitive environments on the north coast of California. Caltrans is currently mired in controversy regarding the unnecessary and destructive Willis Bypass project, which has been fraught with permitting irregularities and is the largest wetlands fill project to be pursued in Northern California in 50 years. Caltrans claims the Richardson Grove Highway widening is needed to accommodate large truck travel, yet Caltrans's own statements and signage indicate that this portion of road is already designated for larger trucks and that Caltrans has exaggerated potential safety problems. Caltrans has not established that this project is necessary for safety or the movement of goods in the economy. Smaller-sized commercial trucks already travel through the Grove to deliver goods to Humboldt County, and legislative exemptions have functioned to allow the passage of oversized trucks. Eco-saboteur Rebecca Rubin gets a 5-year federal prison sentence in this story by Helen Jung of the Oregonian, as carried on the Earth First Newswire. A federal judge on Monday sentenced eco-saboteur Rebecca Rubin to 5 years in prison, less than what prosecutors sought for the former fugitive from Canada. Rubin, voice shaking, apologized to her family, the court, firefighters, as well as targets of the Animal Liberation Front and the Earth Liberation Front. Quote, "I was so convinced at the righteousness of my beliefs that I chose to ignore my own wrongdoing," unquote, Rubin said. Chief U.S. District Judge Ann Aiken, who presided over the sentencing hearings in 2007 of Rubin's co-conspirators in Eugene, Oregon, praised Rubin's statement, calling it, quote, "the most thoughtful, well-stated, honest, and unvarnished apology or explanation," unquote. "I understand more than you know when you work in a democracy that all things look like they're black and white when you're young," the judge said, "and there are so many shades of gray," unquote. Federal prosecutors had asked Aiken for a 7.5-year prison sentence for Rubin. Rubin's attorney argued for 5 years. Rubin pleaded guilty last October before Aiken to arson, attempted arson, and conspiracy to commit arson in Oregon, Colorado, and California as part of the Underground Earth Liberation Front and Animal Liberation Front. She participated in 4 crimes, including planning the eventual $12 million fire that destroyed a ski resort under construction in Vail, Colorado in 1998. She turned herself into the FBI at the Washington-Canadian border in late 2012, driven there by her mother. In a letter to the judge, Rubin apologized for the destruction and fear she wrought. Quote, although at the time I believed my only motivation was my deep love for the earth, I now understand that impatience, anger, egotism, and self-righteousness were also involved, she writes. In retrospect, I recognize how immature my actions were. I am now 40 years old, and I have had much time to reflect on and consider the consequences of my choices, and my thinking has become much more coherent. I know now that my actions were not merely destructive of inanimate objects, but were also harmful to other feeling human beings, unquote. But prosecutors noted that Rubin has refused to give them the names of other participants in her crimes. Quote, while repentance and change are important sentencing factors, they cannot erase 4 years of criminal conduct, followed by several years of running from justice and a continuing desire to protect the last remaining fugitives, unquote, prosecutors said in their memo to the judge. They also argued for a 7.5-year sentence that will, quote, send a strong message to new would-be domestic terrorists and leftover advocates that crimes of violence and years of hiding simply don't pay, unquote. Rubin's lawyer, Richard J. Troberman, said in his memo to the judge that, quote, the defendant, the government, and the probation office all agree that Rebecca was substantially less culpable than the average participant in each of these offenses, unquote. He noted that Rubin worked with animals from 2001 to 2006 as a veterinary assistant in wildlife rehabilitation. She was fully invested in the work she had always wanted to do, healing and releasing lawfully healthy and well-equipped animals back into the wild, and had finally found her true calling, unquote. But she went into hiding when in 2006 she, quote, learned that she had been charged with these offenses. She was alarmed and terrified to see herself compared to Osama bin Laden in the news, and she read that she could be facing up to life in prison, unquote, Troberman said. Living underground took its toll, and Rubin sought help to resolve her case, he said. Rebecca has learned a painful, costly, and lasting lesson as a result of her involvement in these offenses, Troberman said. And grandmother's blockade and megalode in Missoula, Montana, in this story from Wild Idaho Rising Tide, as found on the Earth First Newswire. At 12:30 a.m. on Friday morning, January 24th, the convoy of pilot and flagger vehicles, state, county, and city police escorts, and an 804,000-pound transport of tar sands mining equipment hauled by Portland, Oregon-based Omega Morgan, hesitantly rolled down Reserve Street in Missoula, Montana, and ground to a halt. For a third night, about 60 mostly indigenous people from Missoula, Butte, Helena, and all over Montana and Canada sprang from the sidewalk near Central Avenue and filled the five-lane width of Reserve Street with singing, drumming, and round dancing. Police respectively backed off and stood by, letting the ceremony symbolizing solidarity and friendship continue for 10 to 15 minutes, while dozens of the vehicles and workers facilitated ecocide, genocide, and climate chaos idled all around the beautiful circle. Together with the spirits of the earth, ancestors, and elders, the strong prayers and actions of the Salish, Cree, Anishinaabe, Blackfeet, and Cheyenne people who participated in person and from afar impressed everyone who heard the songs and watched the round dance. A handful of drummers and singers, Amanda, Charles, Lionel, QJ, and others, led two rounds of dancing around them before the joyous blockaders slowly vacated the street. As police encouraged the protesters to move toward the sidewalk, Charles stepped forward toward the convoy vehicles and police to speak for a few moments. Three heroic grandmothers and friends, Claudia Brown, Gail Gilman, and Carol Marsh, stayed behind and sat in the road. Police cited and released Gail and Carol and arrested, booked, and released Claudia on bail. Carol was also arrested on Tuesday when she bravely sat down in front of a megalode blocking its path. As the tar sands megalode convoy resumed progress towards the most destructive and expensive fossil fuel extraction project on Earth, a young Native woman smudged its passage and drumming, singing, and praying blessed the cool night air with hope that the injustices, devastation, and resulting climate change of tar sands exploitation would soon stop. After Reserve Street cleared, Wild Idaho Rising Tide videotaped Missoula City Police issuing citations to two of the grandmothers and interviewed Carol and Gail to discern and share their motivations for responsibly blockading tar sands supply shipments. Their courageous acts mark almost 4 years of similar on-the-ground resistance staged by tribal, climate, and conservation activists in Idaho, Montana, Oregon, and Washington since April 2010. Wild Idaho Rising Tide and our allies admire the determination, organization, and community spirit of Indian People's Action, Blue Skies Campaign, and Northern Rockies Rising Tide, who coordinated the Thursday night round dance blockade and have been standing up to this industrial juggernaut and bringing awareness of tar sands production and transportation damages to the public for years. We appreciate the mutual support, input, and opportunities for cross-state neighbors to confront the unnecessary invasion of big oil. As we anticipate future peaceful tar sands protests around the region, Wild Idahoans will carry the inspiration of this week's amazing experiences into impending demonstrations against Highway 95 megalos soon, but ideally never, tripling the Great Falls tar sands refinery's output. After their Friday morning court hearing and fines that have cost them each a few hundred dollars, Carol Claudia Gale and our Montana comrades are gratefully accepting contributions toward their legal and travel funds as checks written to Carol Marsh or Indian People's Action and sent to Wild Idaho Rising Tide at P.O. Box 9817, Moscow, Idaho 83843. Once again, checks written to Carol Marsh or Indian People's Action and send to Wild Idaho Rising Tide, P.O. Box 9817, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Idle no more. Anti-mining blockade at Mulls Creek steps it up a notch. In this story by Peter Hannum of the Sydney Morning Herald, as carried on the Earth First Newswire. More than 100 protesters have blocked access for work crews in Australia's Leard State Forest as the campaign to block construction of the Mulls Creek open-cut coal mine expands. Workers from Whitehaven Coal, the developer of the planned mine in northern New South Wales, were turned away early on Tuesday, said Georgiana Woods, spokeswoman for the Leard Forest Alliance. Machinery is tied up at three sites and four access roads are blocked, she said. We're basically digging in to stop them from using the machines to clear the forest, says Ms. Woods. It's not going to end until this forest gets a reprieve. Police have arrested at least 10 protesters since the main blockade began about 2 weeks ago. One protester has been arrested on Tuesday as police move in on campaigners attached to several structures on the work site. The campaigners want Federal Environment Minister Greg Hunt to revoke approval to clear the forest for coal mining. Police and the Rural Fire Service this month succeeded in having the Laird Forest declared closed to the public until March 31st by the Forestry Corporation of New South Wales because of fire risk. The move sparked complaints by environmental groups and the Firefighters Union. A separate move by the Narrabri Council to evict protesters from Crown land under their control will now proceed after several conciliators had lodged an objection to the move. The council brought forth a vote on the eviction from February 4th and passed the eviction order by Tuesday afternoon. There's a prediction that there's very hot weather on the way, said Brevin O'Regan, one of the councillors who halted the original council move, detailing the reason given for the early vote. Mr. O'Regan said the council's general manager may not proceed to issue fines for those who refuse to move on from Crown land. The question is now whether they will start evicting or is it a bluff, said Mr. O'Regan. We'll soon find out, he said, asking that the protesters may not move from their camps back into the forest. The Bureau of Meteorology is forecasting a maximum 35 degrees on Tuesday. I believe that's about 100 degrees Fahrenheit. And then 6 days running from 37 to 40 degrees, considerably over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Among people risking arrest on Tuesday was Bill Ryan, a legally blind 91-year-old Kokoda veteran who was taking part with his 65-year-old son, campaigners said. This blockade has given our community hope that we are not just the collateral damage of the coal industry, said Mulls Creek resident Rosalind Drews in a statement. It is doing the job the government should have done, protecting an irreplaceable forest. And here's the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field this week. More than 90 of America's last wild migratory buffalo have been killed by state and treaty hunters so far this season. Since our last update, 18 more buffalo have been gunned down in the Gardner Basin at Beatty Gulch, barely having crossed over the boundary of Yellowstone National Park. The fair chase ethics so embraced by hunters appear to be non-existent. The buffalo haven't even had a chance to experience some of the newly expanded habitat areas in the Gardner Basin because hunters are literally waiting at the park boundary, not far from their vehicles, to shoot them. Three of these buffalo were killed by state tag holders, while 15 were killed by hunters with the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes. One of the IBMP-affiliated tribes who have entered into buffalo's slaughter contracts with Yellowstone National Park. The Confederate Salish and Kootenai tribes have killed more buffalo this season than any other hunting group. Of the 91 buffalo that have been taken so far, 68 have been killed by the Indians, or Native Americans, I should add. And should capture and slaughter operations take place this year, as we anticipate, the Native Americans will acquire hundreds of wild buffalo to take directly to the slaughterhouse. Shooting is an ecologically extinct wildlife species in a state that doesn't even have a resident population is not hunting. It is extermination. Please visit our Take Action page on our website to help end the war against wild migratory bison. And volunteers are needed. The intense field season is, as expected, in wild bison country. Buffalo Field Campaign invites you to join us on the front lines here on the edge of the world's first national park to help defend America's last wild buffalo. If you can spare a couple of weeks, a month, or stay with us for the rest of the season, we welcome your participation. The Buffalo Field Campaign provides room, board, gear, and training, and the wildlife and wildlands provide incredible inspiration. Please go to our webpage, fill out our volunteer application, and send it in. Bring your passion and your ideas. The Buffalo Field Campaign can be reached at P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana. The zip code 59758. Their phone number is 406-646-0070, and please call before you go. And for all this information and more, go to their webpage at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. That's www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And do remember, the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for news. We have a whole big stack to go through, and we didn't make even a third of the way through. But we'll have more Earth First updates next week, so tune back in. If you'd like to listen to a rebroadcast of this Earth First update, tune to Free Radio Santa Cruz tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock. That's Friday at 3 p.m. right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. On Monday nights at 9:30, tune in to Radio Free Moscow, KRFP, on their new high-power frequency of 90.3 FM. I see on their website they are broadcasting with a magnificent 42 watts. And if you'd like to listen to a podcast or download this Earth First update, go to radio4all.net. That's radio, the number, 4all.net. And we want to thank all these folks for helping out the Earth First update. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. We want to thank you for listening, and do tune in next week to another edition of the Earth First Update.